This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. On the line with us, Dr. Joe Rahm. Joe is the physicist. He's a climate expert. He's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. He's the founding editor of climateprogress.org. He's the author of the new book, How to Go Viral and Reach Millions. His previous book, Climate Change, What Everyone Needs to Know. climateprogress.org, the website. You can tweet him at Climate Progress. Joe, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tom.
Or I should respectfully say Dr. Rahm. You have certainly earned that title. You wrote a piece a couple of days ago or a couple of weeks ago that suggests that we may be nearing, I believe this was your phrase, a climate death spiral. If I have that right, what do you mean?
Well, there was an article that came out by 16 leading climate scientists, which basically said there are certain changes in the environment that are irreversible, and if you get to a certain point, they could be unstoppable. And it's like an avalanche. You know, once you start the avalanche, it's just going to keep going and getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
So
you want to avoid that point. And so this article basically tried to look at what are the so-called, you know, amplifying feedbacks, the vicious circles that if you start pushing them, they actually release more greenhouse gas emissions that then create more warming, and so on. And what they basically said is, you know, if we hit this threshold that the nations of the world said in Paris in 2015, we must avoid, you know, 2 degrees Celsius warming, which is 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit. If we hit those, if we hit that point, then we may trigger changes that actually take us to warming, which could be 5 degrees C or 9 degrees Fahrenheit, and that, of course, would be just catastrophic.
Define catastrophic.
Well, I think when you're talking that much warming, when you're talking, let's say, 9 degrees Fahrenheit global warming, you're now talking about moving to a world where the oceans are flooding, you know, all of our coastal cities. We're talking about several feet, you know, 4, 5, 6 feet of sea level rise this century, but it doesn't stop. It would keep rising a foot a decade. So on the coastal front, it's, you know, a catastrophe. But inland, in areas that are semi-arid, like, you know, California and in parts of our breadbasket, you're talking about moving to a purely arid, very dry climate where the natural climate is, in fact, a drought. In fact, you don't call it, of course, if your natural climate is a drought, you don't say you're in a drought, you just become a desert.
Right.
You know, that's what we mean by climate change. People have been noticing already, I think, that droughts have been getting longer and longer. Certainly if you're on the West Coast, you notice how many long, extreme droughts we've had in the past decade or two. Eventually, you just change the climate so that it's always a drought and you get a spolification. So the great risk is that some of these impacts start and they compound and they accelerate, and that is the climate death spiral.
So to what extent right now, what we're experiencing right now, where we're seeing these massive droughts on the West Coast combined with terrible floods on the East Coast, to what extent is that the consequence of the planet warming versus the effect of the planet warming being to diminish the temperature gradient between the Arctic and the mid-latitudes, which reduces the strength, the rigidity, or the resilience of the jet stream, you know, this river of air, cold air flowing around the Arctic, so that it starts drooling down over, you know, land masses like North America and doesn't move the way it was moving when you and I were kids. And as a result, what would have been, you know, 3 days of hot weather followed by 3 days of rain followed by 3 days of hot weather as the weather systems would move through is now 3 weeks of hot weather. And, you know, it may not be any hotter than it was before or just slightly hotter than it was before, but because of its persistence, it's so, or extremely rainy weather for that matter, because of its persistence, it's so destructive.
Well, that's a very good point, Tom. So there are two effects going on. So we have a gradual warming. and that warming shifts the if you can envision in your mind a bell curve where the tail at the far right is the extremes. If you just shift that, that tail, the part that used to be, you know, a once in a 100 year or once in a 1,000 year storm, might become once every decade. So you purely directly from global warming are going to see many more extreme events. And you've raised the second point, which is if we change the climate in unusual ways, then there are going to be unexpected impacts. And one of those impacts is the weakening of the jet stream that you described. And it is certainly the case that there have been many studies in the past decade that have said, yes, you reduce the jet stream that pushes the weather all quickly in the United States from west to east, that strength is fueled by the temperature difference between the Arctic and the tropics, the Gulf of Mexico and the tropical oceans. It is a well-known effect of climate change that as you warm up the planet, the Arctic warms twice as fast. And because the Arctic warms twice as fast, the temperature gradient does drop and you get a weaker jet stream. So clearly that has been happening. That, you know, when you talk about record rainfalls, obviously Hurricane Harvey, Houston last year, what was described as a once in 25,000 year rain event where basically a hurricane came on shore and kind of just sat there for like 3 days. And the deluge was terrible. And in the case of droughts and wildfires, I mean, we're seeing out west, again, we're seeing static, frozen, very slowly changing weather patterns where it's just 100-degree day after 100-degree day. And so you get the compounding of one of the things that happens when you get an extended heat wave is that the heat dries up all the land. And once you dry up all the land, then all of the heat just goes into heating up the land and making the kindling, you know, hotter. And that's what we have. And that's why we're seeing these record-smashing wildfires associated with the droughts and the heat waves. So, yes, we're seeing, you know, what are sometimes called nonlinear effects, where you get a quantum change in the system from one state to another, different state. And one of the points of this article that I wrote about on climate progress is that the current state that we're in is not necessarily a stable state, and if you push it a little too hard, it'll be like, you know, you push a rock down the cliff and it hits other rocks and you get the avalanche. And so we have to fight as hard as possible to avoid, you know, getting to that point of no return. And, you know, no one can tell you exactly what it is, obviously, because we're doing this one-shot experiment on the planet. But it is critical, you know, that if you look at the science, it's clear that we are getting closer and closer to that point. And that's why it's so important that we, you know, elect people who are going to push back against Donald Trump and his wanton and reckless inaction on climate change.
Right. Let's talk about messaging for a minute in the minute and a half or 2 minutes we have left. Back, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, something like that, maybe even a little longer, I was in a meeting with a bunch of Democratic senators and members of the House of Representatives, along with several other progressive talk show hosts. And one of us raised the issue of the vulnerability of our voting systems and our election machines. And one of the Democratic senators said to our group, and this kind of shut down the conversation, that the Democratic Party is not willing to talk about this out loud because we're concerned that, because A, we're not certain that it's that big a problem yet, and B, even if it is, we're afraid that it'll cause people to be discouraged and not come to vote. I'm seeing something that seems like the climate change equivalent of that. Let's not scare the chickens, right? Let's not have a conversation about what the real extremes could be or where this might go. How do we message this in a way that doesn't, you know, cause 10-year-olds to break down in tears and yet at the same time communicates how grave the situation has already become and certainly how grave it has the potential to become?
Well, one of the points that I make in the book, How to Go Viral and Reach Millions, is, look, we need to be honest. There's enough disinformation out there. If we don't tell the accurate information, nobody will. So that's point one. But point two is you have to know how to do effective communications. And then I try in the book to explain, you know, what it means to be effective communicators. Now, you know, look, in the case of climate change, we're not saying the problem is past the point of no return and it can't be solved. We're just saying we're getting closer and closer. The solutions are here. I mean, as you know from my writing, from Climate Progress and my books, you know, the clean energy, and you've reported on the clean energy revolution, it is here. We have the solutions at hand. Right. It is quite literally politics and politicians and the oil industry and the, you know, the conservative Republicans who they back who have been blocking action. So I think the message of, you know, How to Go Viral and Reach Millions, is quite simple. We are getting close to the point of no return, but there is time to act. And what's more, the sooner we act, the fewer the impacts will be, and the slower they will occur. That's the other point. Action aggressively in the near future means that whatever impacts we get occur at a slower rate, and we have more time to deal with it.
Yeah, that's really important stuff, and these are the messages that need to be communicated. And I mean, there's even now decarbonizing technologies out there. We saw some of this in Europe that are very promising. Dr. Joe Rahm, physicist, climate expert, senior fellow at American Progress, founder of climateprogress.org. His most recent book, How to Go Viral and Reach Millions. Before that, Climate Change, What Everyone Needs to Know. You can tweet him at Climate Progress. Joe, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
It's always great talking to you. Thank you so much.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's 18 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls right after this. And welcome back. Oh, let's pick up some phone calls here. Marissa in Englewood, Florida. Hey, Marissa, what's on your mind today? Marissa? Watching us on Free Speech TV?
There's a Marcia.
Oh, Marcia. I'm sorry. Hey, Marcia. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi. How you doing, Tom?
Good. What's up?
I've been looking into this thing about losing Democratic voters, and I went on to the roster that our supervisor of elections for Charlotte County, mm-hmm. Florida, has, and he's got everything broken down by precinct. In Charlotte County alone, the total number of registered voters are 59,795. Total number of Democrats, 36,487.
36,000.
And others, which includes supposedly independents in that, 36,000, exactly double what the Democrats are. So what they're saying is that half of this county has switched from either Democrat or Republican, to other.
Hmm.
And in my district alone, there's 1,120 registered voters, the Republican voters, 779 of which are Democrats, 748 are others.
Marcia, are you suggesting that the missing 2% of Florida Democrats is that 2% of Florida Democrats have re-registered as independents in the last 16 months?
I can't prove that, or I can't prove that they haven't flipped them from Democrat to independent.
Right. Do you have closed primaries in Florida so that only, or are they open primaries?
I didn't get what you said.
I said, do you have closed primaries or open primaries in Florida?
Closed.
Okay, so if they take Democrats out of the Democratic primaries, they're going to reduce turnout. Oh, geez. Yeah, but that doesn't mean that people can't still vote. I mean, people will still be able to vote in the election in November. I'm concerned that people are actually being removed from the voting rolls. I can't imagine that the Democratic Party, somebody tweeted a little bit ago that, this is Democrats leaving the Democratic Party in Florida because Tom Perez decided that the Democratic Party should take money from fossil fuel interests. That happened 3 days ago. This 2% drop in Florida Democrats has happened over the last 16 to 18 months. And I just don't see any explanation for it. This is a time when the Democratic Party is gaining enthusiasm, gaining members, growing, and yet in Florida it's shrinking. Something is rotten in Denmark, to paraphrase Shakespeare.
I know. I think something stinks too, but I can't put my finger on what it is. But in every instance, in every district, if you would take the number of Democratic voters combined with the number of independent voters, you would beat the Republican vote every single district.
Well, that's true of anywhere in the country, but independents don't always vote Democratic. They're kind of split relatively evenly. So that's going to be a tough one. But Marcia, thank you for looking up the voting rolls for us and for getting that information. I appreciate it. Thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. It's 22 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. A few other things in the news, just very quickly. The Manhattan madam who was subpoenaed to testify before the Mueller inquiry, grand jury specifically, I believe it was late last week, was interviewed on Fox's Good Day New York and confirmed that. And when they asked her, what were they asking you about, she said, quote, "They're legitimately going after Russian collusion." This on the part of Roger Stone and Donald Trump. My words, not hers. She says, Davis explained, "They're concerned about whether or not it actually happened. Tweets and things that seem to foretell this hacking coming and whether or not we really knew." That's interesting because Roger Stone was basically saying, Tony Podesta's time in the box is coming and Hillary Clinton is going to be, stay tuned, guys, and like, how did he know? Was he in it with the Russians? Is that what's going on? So I think it's a good question. Another amazing story. This, our national motto is "In God We Trust," right? That this was adopted during the Eisenhower administration in a moment of religious fervor, as a way of saying those godless communists, right? The Soviet Union and the Chinese—they don't believe in God. They're atheists, but we believe in God. And so I think it was 1956, "In God We Trust" became our national motto. So now in Florida, Representative Kim Daniels, who runs a side ministry and speaks to demons, yes, seriously, in fact, she said one looks like the Predator from the movie Predator, sneaked the mandatory display requirement into an educational spending bill this spring. This is from the Freedom from Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. This was in the wake of the shooting massacre at the Marjorie Stoneham Douglas High School, which is kind of an insult. In Tennessee, this was an education bill in Florida. In Tennessee, a law was adopted this March requiring Tennessee schools to, quote, prominently display the pious national motto. Why? Well, Terry Lynn Weaver, one of the Republicans who voted for this bill, said, "It will help future generations of students better understand the importance of faith and remind them that the very bedrock of our nation was built on the principles of God and the Bible." Right. It's not true, by the way. The foundation of our country was entirely secular. In fact, they rejected religion at the founding of our country. In Alabama, a law took effect June 1st, encouraging the voluntary posting of the national motto, "In God We Trust," in classrooms, courthouses, office buildings, libraries, and on law enforcement and service vehicles. In Louisiana, public schools will be required to display "In God We Trust" on their buildings by August of next year after passing a mandatory posting law. State Senator Regina Barrow says this will address the moral decay in our public schools. Now, Madison and Jefferson had this big argument going that's just fascinating to read. Madison was concerned that if government started supporting the churches, it would corrupt the churches. Madison was a good churchgoer. Jefferson was concerned that if priests or ministers ever got political office, that they would corrupt the government. Turns out they were both right. Both of them thought it wasn't possible that the other one could be right because America would never go that crazy. Well, here we are. We're that crazy. And that, this is totally antithetical to the American tradition. It's 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Your media support group for We the People. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be back right after this break, picking up your calls. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Michael in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, I got a question and an observation.
Okay.
Okay, the 2% that might be leaving Puerto Rico, could it be possibly the Puerto Ricans?
No. The Puerto Ricans aren't leaving Florida. B, you would expect to have seen a large surge in Democratic voters as a result. And C, and perhaps most importantly, when you move out of a state, I don't know anybody. I've lived in Michigan, New Hampshire, Vermont, Georgia, and Oregon. And every time I left a state, I did not bother to contact the Secretary of State's office and say, I've left the state, deregister me. It's just, you just don't do that, right? So that's why they do the actual reasonable purges periodically, where they just try to determine who's moved out of the state or died. That's not an unreasonable thing to do. But the Republicans are using these normal purges and putting them on steroids to say, oh, we're going to mail a card out to people, and if they don't return it, that must mean they've left. And, which is what the Supreme Court just authorized Ohio to do, and now other states are imitating that.
I know.
If 100,000 Puerto Ricans had come to Florida, registered to vote after the disaster in Puerto Rico, and then gone back to Puerto Rico in the last 6 months, you still wouldn't see a reduction in the voting rolls because of that.
Okay.
So I don't think that's what's going on. But it's a good idea. Good try, Michael. Thanks for the call. Bill in Sunrise, Missouri. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind today?
Can you hear me okay?
You're on the air, Bill.
Okay, I'm in George, Washington. I just needed to give I'm on the road. The Russian thing, I understand the concern. I wouldn't doubt the Republicans are behind that. But what I'm concerned about, what's still going on, I guess what just came out yesterday in Johnson County, Kansas, there's a glitch that favors the Republicans slightly in the primary votes. And they're trying to look into that, and they're getting no answers.
Where is this?
Again, Republicans owning the voting machines and stuff.
Bill, where is this?
Johnston County, Kansas.
Huh. Oh, Kansas. Chris Kobach's state. He's the Secretary of State there. He controls the voting rolls.
Yes. So, again, it's something that the Republicans own in this country, and we can't seem to get them to court or some legal way to reprimand the situation.
Yeah, and you're calling it a glitch. I would not call it a glitch. I would call it a hack. There's something wrong going on. Bill, thank you. Good point. Something we need to be paying attention to. Jim in Chicago. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind today?
I was actually calling about earlier. You had someone on. You were talking about climate change.
Yeah, that was Dr. Joe Rahm from climateprogress.org.
Yeah, incredibly informative. One thing I've been reading a lot about, and Scientific American ran an article a while back about this, one serious consequence of climate change is when areas of permafrost begin to melt, that is beginning to release
methane,
bacteria, and certain kinds of virus that we haven't seen in tens of thousands of years that we don't have immunities to anymore.
You're right.
Good example would be anthrax. In Siberia, there was an anthrax outbreak that spread from reindeer, and it spread into, I think, about 100 or so people in the local population. But it was a strain of anthrax that we hadn't seen in thousands of years, and there was no immunity, and there was no way to combat it.
I didn't know about that. What I did know is that there is concern that there may be human remains that are buried in permafrost, dating from the flu of 1918. The deadly Spanish flu, they called it. Flu that has a really high death rate.
And that's a major concern too. Flooding coastal waters. A huge concern, but there is whole other sections of consequences to global warming that I just don't think a lot of people consider. that a lot of people don't know about. And as far as I'm concerned, deadly diseases being released after 10,000 years we don't have an immunity to me is a lot more dangerous and deadly than a 2 or 3 foot rise of water on the coast. You know, that can affect more people than just coastal dwellers.
Yeah, good point. Disease. Laura Garrett wrote this incredible book called The Coming Plague. It was about 15 years ago that she wrote it, maybe a little longer. And it just, you know, rigorously documents how we have we've basically turned our population and the planet into a giant petri dish, just waiting for this to happen. Jim, thank you for the call. I think you're spot on. By the way, some more news here, just kind of breaking news. Penn Jillette, you know, what's his partner? Penn Jillette, the magician slash comedian, you know, from Vegas and whatnot. There's a long interview with him over at vulture.com. And they asked him, does Mark Burnett was the guy who produced, one of the two people who produced Celebrity Apprentice. Does Mark Burnett have tapes of President Trump saying damaging things during Celebrity Apprentice? And Penn Jillette says, yeah, I was in the room. Oh, really? Question, you've heard him say? Answer, oh, yeah. So, you know, like I said, I'm not surprised that Trump has used the N-word in the past. I mean, I'd be surprised, frankly, if he didn't, given all the racism that's spilling out all around him and that you can, you know, I mean, his father was arrested at a Ku Klux Klan rally. It's like, what more do you need, right? But Omarosa has apparently leaked another. This is the latest bombshell. I'm reading this from Raw Story. Former White House staffer Omarosa Manigault Newman added a new major twist to the timeline of Russian meddling in the 2016 election by claiming that President Donald Trump knew the content of the stolen emails that were released by WikiLeaks prior to the public publishing of the documents. This is what she told Katie Tour today at MSNBC. I will say this, there was a lot of corruption that went on both in the campaign and in the White House. I am not going to blow the whistle on all of it.
Whoa.
Meanwhile, there's a coup d'etat going on in West Virginia. In West Virginia, the Supreme Court is elected on a nonpartisan basis. The names are on the ballot, people campaign, and then you vote for those names. No party affiliation. But it turns out that more than half of the West Virginia Supreme Court is currently represented by people who, before they got elected, were registered as Democrats. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has just been impeached. West Virginia lawmakers completed, this is from NBC News, completed the extraordinary move of impeaching all 4 state Supreme Court justices Monday night. The excuse that they're using is, oh, it's not because they're Democrats, it's because they spent too much money on a new couch. Right. And they failed to control office expenses.
Right.
The minority Democrats in the House Judiciary Committee that approved the articles of impeachment last week had tried to speed up the impeachment process in the hopes of beating an August 14th deadline for getting a special election. Instead, the committee took its time, even conducting a tour of the state Supreme Court offices earlier this month. Republican Governor Jim Justice will now appoint new justices. So the Republican governor now, because the Republicans stalled so that there wouldn't be a special election, the Republican governor gets to replace the 3 Democrats and 1 Republican with 4 Republicans. Surprised? No, I'm not either. Rob, in Mesa, Arizona?
It's Arizona.
Arizona, that's what I thought. It says AR here. But anyhow, what's up?
Okay, I think I've got a solution here. The thing that I disagree with you on is we're spending too much time over how people are going to be thrown off the election ballots. That's going to happen. What we need to do now is demand that every provisional ballot that's given out, they need to pass a law that every state must notify people who receive a provisional ballot during the election. They must be notified whether they were eligible to elect or, you know, a vote. And if they were, if their vote was counted, and if their vote wasn't counted, why?
Yeah.
So we need to hold those provisional ballots as kind of a weather vane after the fact consequence of this coming election, because we know the Republicans, if they could blame the Russians on voter registrations being tampered with, they're going to do that.
Yep.
That's in their best interest.
Yep, I agree. And I've been saying for some time now that the reason why you have red shifts in these various states, particularly Missouri and places like that, where it's over 5%, the reason that you have redshift is not necessarily that the machines have been hacked, although I don't, I will entertain that possibility, I don't reject it, but rather that 5% of the voters were taken off the voting rolls, and thanks a lot for the call, were taken off the voting rolls, and when they showed up, they were getting a provisional ballot. Now, the problem, as you point out, is that the majority of Americans don't know what it means to get a provisional ballot. What it means is your vote will not be counted. And so it's a placebo ballot. It's a pretend ballot. It's just there to make you feel good. It was written into the Help America Vote Act in 2002 by the Republicans, and there it is. And what we need to do is educate Americans to the fact that if they say, oh, well, I don't see your name here, but here's a provisional ballot, that means your vote doesn't get counted. Raise hell. We'll be back. It's 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's the program where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person, and dare to say, no, I don't think so. Not a chance. And welcome back. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I was thinking that we really don't need Amorosa's tape or Penn Gillette to tell us whether or not you heard Donald Trump use the N-word. Because we're looking at it this way. It's like, if we hear someone use the N-word, that means they're a racist. But if we don't hear them use the N-word, I guess that means they're not. But that's not true. Racism is, as I understand it, the following. Racism is prejudicial attitudes combined with the levers of power.
Yeah, Stokely Carmichael.
Does Donald Trump have the levers of power? Yes. He's the president of the United States. Now, what are attitudes of prejudice, racial prejudice? Let's look at what an attitude is. In the social psychology definition is this. An attitude is defined as thoughts or cognitions charged with emotion, which predisposes action or behavior. Now, have we ever heard Donald Trump express thoughts or cognitions of against people of ethnic color or ethnicity or color? Yes. Were they emotional? Hell yes. And have they predisposed action to behavior? Can you think of any actions or behaviors that he's taken? Yes. Let's start with Judge Curiel. He cannot be objective in this case because he's Mexican and I'm building a wall. He identifies the race and he says what his action is.
Right.
How about the guy, the Muslim ban? How about, there are too many to count. So we really don't need to hear him say the N-word or not. He's demonstrated his prejudicial attitude combined with his lever of power.
Yeah,
he's a racist.
I agree, and I think Stokely Carmichael, as I recall, pointed out. He said, "If you want to lynch me, that's your problem. If you have the power to lynch me, that's my problem." And
that's,
I think,
true.
That defines, you know, what should be the definition of racism in a really substantial way. And the problem that we have right now is that the Republican Party, largely running on a platform of white supremacy, largely, is in control of the majority of our states and all of our federal government. And they're stacking up on the Supreme Court.
That's there you go. There's some more prejudicial attitude vested in the powers, the levers of power. So, you have your white, redneck, honky, whatever you want to call them, who might have prejudicial attitudes. But as long as he has nothing to do, as you just said, if you want to lynch me, that's one thing. But if you don't have the power, that's one thing. But if you do, that's another. If we have a voting system which gives them an advantage, well, there's another lever of power, and they are certainly the minority in this country. The white supremacists, the white racists are a minority, but the levers of power have been pulled in their direction so far in lately, I should say.
Right. Right, and they've been done, and this has been done with the enthusiastic agreement and support of petro billionaires like the Koch brothers, who, you know, started with the Tea Party, and they put this whole thing on steroids. The Tea Party, a white somewhat racist movement that became aggressively racist that has now turned into, you know, and taken over the modern Republican Party. Paul, thank you for the call. Excellent points all, and very well put together. Well said. Thank you, Paul. We'll be right back. It's 49 minutes past the hour, coming up on 11 minutes before the hour. We'll stick around. What a fascinating day we've got here. So many amazing and interesting things going on in the world. Diego in Wetland, Vermont? Is that right?
That's right. This is Diego.
Hey, hello. Diego. What's up?
Okay, two things. One, I completely agree with your point. I do.
Which point?
There's so many things that are part of the public. And if the common isn't protected, we all suffer. And it's not fair to let people mine or fish or timber or whatever the common.
Sure.
Because it's not theirs. It's not even ours. It's all of ours, and it's the future. But I had an off comment to make that's still part of this piece. Earlier today, Manafort pled guilty and rested his case without putting on any evidence.
He did not plead guilty. He rested his case without putting up a defense.
But you know why? It was, it's a tacit acceptance of full pardon from Trump. That's all it is.
That's my guess. I mean, why would he go to trial and not even offer a defense if he didn't think that he was going to be pardoned on the backside? On the other hand, though, you can only cut a deal with the prosecutor if the prosecutor is willing to do it. And it may be first of all, this is the first. This is the first of two criminal indictments against Manafort. He's got to go to another trial, and we don't know. Excuse me, I'm under attack here. We don't know what that second trial is going to be about. So
I agree.
So
I agree.
It may well.
I wouldn't want him to put on any evidence that could be used against him. He doesn't have to testify.
Right. It may well be that the prosecutor decided we're gonna nail this guy and make him an example and put the fear of God in all the rest of them, and then they're going to move on from here. If they get a solid conviction here. Without mentioning Donald Trump's name, then they go into the next one where they really go after Trump. That's a possibility too, and maybe Manafort is just collateral damage. He's just toast, and they have no interest in salvaging him or resurrecting him. I don't know, but
I don't think he would rest his case this way to help the prosecution. I think he rested it just to say yes, pardon me.
Yeah, well, it could be. I don't know, Diego, but it's a fascinating one to follow. Diego, thanks for the call. I think you may be right. Rita in Hawaii. Hey, Rita, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Yes.
Please tell me, where is the proof that Russia did it again? It's Russia did it.
Russia did what again?
Pardon me?
Where's the proof that Russia did what again?
The Florida.
Oh, is inside the voting machines? Or inside?
Rubio saying Florida got into this. Where are the fingerprints?
Yeah. You would have to ask Bill Nelson and Richard Burr and Marco Rubio, because they're the ones who are asserting this. They're on the Intelligence Committee. They said it's classified. By revealing the details, they're concerned that they would reveal how they know those details. You know, if there's a spy inside the Kremlin or something like that, they don't want this guy to get killed. But I'm inclined to believe, particularly when you get two Republicans and a Democrat all saying the same thing, I'm inclined to believe it. So, you know,
I'm inclined to believe something happened here. Somebody's in here, but I'm not inclined to want to always be blaming Russia.
Me neither.
Very
me neither. It's becoming a tick, particularly among Democrats, and it's probably not a particularly useful one. On the other hand, if the question that I've never answered has never been answered to my satisfaction, although it appears since a dozen GRU members have been indicted now by Robert Mueller. My original thought was, well, maybe this is just the Internet Research Bureau, which is a company in Russia that has done work for the Russian government, but maybe they were hired by Paul Manafort. Maybe they were doing this on behalf of the Republican Party. These kinds of things.
Maybe it's some 400-pound man sitting on a bed over in...
Could be, but when you indict 12 members of a foreign intelligence service, and I encourage you, Rita, to read the indictment. It's available. It's online. They go through and they say, okay, this guy was in this place at this time and said this to this person and did this on that. You know, I mean, the indictments are incredibly detailed. and they would not, and no, and to the best of my knowledge, you know, nobody is claiming that they're BS, that they're not true. So I think that there's a there. I just don't know what it is, and I don't think any of us do yet. Rita, thank you for the call. You know, I look forward to finding out what the there is, if it's there. James in Spokane. Hey, James, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Shalom. And I want to talk about rebranding the Democratic Party again.
Okay.
You know, Democratic labor. We need to learn the history of labor in this country, how many people were hurting and dying before the 40-hour work week, and what people had to go through to get us a 40-hour work week. And I think the quickest way to educate people about that is for the Democratic Party to change its name to the Democratic Labor Party and explain exactly why.
Like they've done in Minnesota.
I'm sorry?
They did that in Minnesota. Well, actually, I don't know that they did that in Minnesota. There is a Democratic Labor Party in Minnesota or something that's very similar to that. But whether it emerged as an independent party, I don't know its history, frankly. But James, I think your point is well taken, and the Democrats do need to make it very clear to everybody in America that they're on the side of labor. Spot on. Finally, Rich in Cedro Woolley, Washington. Rich, you got a little less than a minute. A quick one here? Rich? Oh, geez. Okay. I guess no Rich. And it's just, well, let's see. Bruce in Clinton, Ohio, you want to try in 30 seconds?
I'll try real quick. I want to talk to you about the Iran sanctions that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Is there anything that would keep a third party, say Russia, from either purchasing items from us and reselling them to Iran and making a profit, or say buying oil from Iran and turning around and then selling it to us?
I don't know. I believe that is how Iran is currently getting around the sanctions, not necessarily with Russia, although, you know, who knows? I mean, Russia's part of the Iran deal that was worked out with Obama. But yeah, I think that's probably how, you know, getting around sanctions is typically done. Bruce, thanks for the call. Great question. Thank you all for being with us today. It's been a fascinating day. I suspect that tomorrow is not going to be any more boring. So please join us again tomorrow, same time, same bat place. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us, and that includes you. So get out there, get active, tag, you're it.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.